Hi, this is Jeff Keen, or Jeffy from the Family Circus. Whenever I talk to people and I say, who's listening to Mr. Media? They say, not me. And I don't know.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to Palm Beach Daily News political cartoonist and columnist David Wilson. He's here to talk about the first collection of his work, Billionaires and Butterfly Ballots, a 20-year Palm Beach cartoon spective. Stick around. As long as you're not a rich, pampered, tone-deaf idiot, you're probably safe from his wicked pen. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, brought to you today by the Stitcher app for mobile devices. Give it a test drive today at stitcher.com/mrmedia, Mr. Media. I love this free radio app, and I think you will too. Stitcher.com/mrmedia. Today's episode of Mr. Media Interviews is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. You know GoDaddy.com from their wild and sexy commercials, but isn't it time you actually test drove their web hosting and domain registration services yourself? For a limited time, Mr. Media listeners can save 10% on the already low price of web hosting services at GoDaddy.com by entering the promo code POD4 at checkout. Again, that's 10% off web hosting when you go to GoDaddy.com and enter the promo code POD4, that's P-O-D, the number 4, at checkout. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of proud rejects from the Social Register, who knew better than to be part of any Palm Beach club that would have them as members in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. There is a lot of money in the Florida East Coast town of Palm Beach. It's controlled by people who have so much cash and so much free time that they inevitably say and do things to which the average person, just across the bridge in West Palm Beach, for example, can't begin to relate. Many of these folks live their lives like cartoon characters, so it's fortunate that the local newspaper, the Palm Beach Daily News, has a political cartoonist capable of capturing them in the four-color glory of their natural environment. The only real wonder is why David Wilson hasn't been run out of town by pitchfork and torch-bearing villagers. Surely the good folks of Palm Beach know he's laughing at them, not with them. Whatever the answer, the rest of us are lucky that Wilson has continued to expose the peculiarities that are unique to this pampered, cloistered community, and that his beautiful cartoons have finally been collected in a best-of volume, Billionaires and Butterfly Ballots. David Wilson, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Delighted to finally talk to you. We've communicated on Facebook and email a bit over the years, and glad we have something here of yours to talk about.
I've followed your program for years.
Well, I'm sorry for that, but we're glad to have you here anyway. How is it that the good American patriots of Palm Beach haven't run your ass out of town in all these years, David?
Well, actually, I don't laugh at them instead of with them. They're pretty thick-skinned people, and they enjoy my work.
Oh, you just killed the whole premise of the interview. Is that possible? I mean, maybe those that haven't been in your work are thick-skinned, but I can't imagine those you've.
Let's put it this way: Palm Beach has its image, and the image, of course, is the one that you just outlined. But in actuality, Palm Beach is a diverse community, just like any other community. They just happen to have more money per capita there. And so you have different neighborhoods and different agendas, and you have people living in condos, albeit them expensive condos, and you have people in neighborhoods that are were built initially as ranch house neighborhoods, but they were upscale and near the beach. And then you have your estate Palm Beachers. So there's a wide variety of people. They're all probably in the upper 2%, but you have your 0.03%ers there as well, and in very high quantities.
Now, you, it was interesting to read that your family actually goes back to the earliest days of Palm Beach County. You guys have been around forever. So for people who have never been to Palm Beach, who've only read about it in parody or just in disbelief, if you will, tell us a little bit about, you know, what Palm Beach is to you and, you know, how we should put it in perspective to the rest of the world.
Well, I mean, when my ancestors first came here, the only thing that they really had in billions was mosquitoes. And I used that line in my book. But the truth of the matter was it was a very swampy area, but it had a kind of natural beauty about it. And that natural beauty is still here today. Back in those days, the body of water that we now call the Intracoastal Waterway, it was actually a freshwater lake just inside of the barrier island. And there was lots of wildlife and unique vegetation. And in fact, there's, you know, ample evidence that because of the abundance of freshwater and game, that the Spanish used to pull their treasure fleet offshore and stock up just before heading across the ocean north of the Bahamas to get to Europe. So it's always been kind of a destination, if you will, that as time went on and various successive generations of my family continued to be involved in the community and help build the community, Palm Beach changed from a settlement community, very much like one that you would find in the Bahama Islands, the Out Islands today, to Flagler's Hotel Resort Paradise, and then eventually, with the layers of Addison Meisner's Mediterranean Revival development and so forth on Worth Avenue and that sort of thing, it became a destination that was attractive to, I would say, upscale tourism. But it's a beautiful area, and I love it.
How did, I mean, the town of Palm Beach, how did it become so insular and so distrusting of the outside world?
Well, that's something that has mainly occurred over the last, 40 years. Growing up here myself, as a child, I remember it being just a different town across the bridges, and it really had a lot more diversity in it as far as the businesses were concerned. And it was a more open and inviting town. The beach, and by and large, the public beach was developed and essentially open for use from everyone, as opposed to something like today. You could drive by it and not even know that there's a public beach there. It's been so cordoned off with landscaping and reduced parking, et cetera, that you don't know that it's even there unless you're from around here. That's mainly due to the development that occurred in the 60s. They built all of those original public facilities were torn down. A hurricane more or less destroyed the Palm Beach Pier, so that also disappeared. And condos were built all along the oceanfront there, and the people that live in those condos have a tendency to want to maintain their view, their private view. So that attitude kind of crept into town government, especially since about 1980, and they've actually enacted some government ordinances in Palm Beach that essentially force business owners to do an audit to prove that 50% of their customers are from on the island. It's called the town serving ordinance. So as a result, you have a real narrowing of the kinds of businesses that are on the island as well.
Over the years, I think I've been, I've been in Palm Beach, the town of Palm Beach, and I'm separating the town from the county. But I think I've been in the town maybe two or three times. I remember the first time I was there, my wife and I were just driving back up the coast, and we thought, well, let's stop there. We've never been. And I have never been made to feel as unwelcome in a town as we were that day. And we were just shopping. We were around Worth Avenue. We were looking for a place to eat. And, man, the looks and the questions that you'd get there, unlike, you know, most anywhere else, I just thought, wow, these people are really full of themselves.
Were you talking about the shop, the people working in the shops?
People working in the shops. And just like when we finally found a place to eat, I remember sitting down and people were like looking at you like they knew that you weren't from there. I mean, just whatever it was, you weren't from there. You didn't belong there. And how long was it going to take you to finish eating and get out of town?
That's funny. Yeah, the irony is that most of the people that work in those shops hop into a downscale car and drive across the bridge and live in a rental apartment across the water. So, but they'll definitely look down their nose at you if they don't think you have the money to be, you know, buying extremely overpriced goods in their store. The funny thing is that most of the real honest to God 0.03% or billionaires that I've met typically dress like you and me and in their old favorite jeans and a 20-year-old shirt and, you know, ratty docksiders. So, you know, they're kind of cutting off their nose to spite their face when they do that in the shops. You know, where did you go to eat?
Oh, God. I couldn't even begin to tell you. I know we sat outside somewhere, but it was somewhere on Worth Avenue, I believe. But this was this was 20 years ago.
Yeah, there's still a few old guard restaurants and bars and places like that, and some new ones as well that have been started up by the children of former owners of places that had places and still have places around here since the 60s and 70s. And it's a lot more inviting than what you just described.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. So tell me about chronicling the area. You know, the title of your book, Billionaires and Butterfly Ballots. Obviously, the billionaire part is obvious. The butterfly ballots may not be as clear to someone who doesn't follow politics. That has a lot to do with the 2000 elections, I believe, unless I'm wrong.
Yep. We were the place where, according to some people, Al Gore lost the election. That election was his to lose, actually. I don't know why he didn't do better than he did. But we had a ballot snafu that really looked an awful lot like the Facebook timeline layout now. Yeah. Your various items on both sides, and you're trying to figure out how it connects in the middle. And it's just a really poor way of designing things because it's not intuitive at all. And the way the punch holes lined up, it was confusing, and some people thought they voted for Pat Buchanan when they really meant to vote for Al Gore, which made us, of course, a laughing stock of the country. And from that point on, we've been known as Florida.
And how do you pick, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
How do you pick your targets for your cartoons? You know, and do you walk a line in terms of, you know, making fun and yet remembering that you live in the community and sometimes what you write about or what you draw reflects indirectly as much on you as them?
Absolutely. But it's not so much a matter of remembering that I live in the community as basically understanding that but for the grace of God goes I. I mean, everybody is pretty similar in a lot of ways. It doesn't matter how much money you have. And we all, you know, say stupid things and do stupid things. So when you're someone who is has an aspect of celebrity in your life, obviously you're fair game for this kind of thing. And, you know, I guess the main perspective that I keep in mind when I'm doing cartoons about people who do have celebrity or who are important in the town, I do a lot of cartoons about local government figures and that sort of thing, is that really what I like to bring to the cartoon is that extra perspective of what is this story, what is this event that occurred in the news this over the last week or 2 weeks, and maybe even other events that are occurring that somehow dovetail into it around the nation and the world. What does it really say about us as human beings? And so then I tried to do a cartoon that everybody can relate to in some way or another, as opposed to taking a particular strident point of view, standing on a soapbox as a cartoonist. I don't really see any point in that.
So you're not in the cartoons. You're not necessarily trying to put forth a political point of view yourself.
Yeah, I don't know that I even really have one, except that I think both political parties have a lot to answer for in this country right now. I think they've done a lot to screw up the election process.
Do you? I don't know if it's safe to, if it's fair to ask you, but I will anyway. Do you lean towards one party or another, or independent, or libertarian, or?
I'm a registered Democrat that typically votes Republican.
Really?
So, yeah.
Interesting.
Go figure. But the Republican people I vote for, typically I vote for them because I do have some conservative point of views when it comes to economics and to some degree foreign policy, but social policy, you know, I like to skew more liberally or and actually I find the libertarian point of view very intriguing because it's interesting that both the extreme left and the extreme right seem to cue in on a lot of libertarian issues in the same way. And I think if you were to take a cross-section of America, how they really feel about issues, especially social issues, I think they would tend to really be speaking more in a libertarian tone than anything else.
Interesting. And what about when you went through all of your work over these 20 years, picking out, you know, what you wanted to put in this collection? What kind of things did you notice that your work had in common from the beginning to you know, more recent? I don't want to say the end; that doesn't sound right. But from the beginning until now, and then what surprised you as you compared your work over the years?
Well, there's a lot of stories that just don't go away. I've done cartoons about them over and over again. Some of them are local. Being an island, it very much like the Keys or any other place, there's a lot of feral cats. You have feral cat colonies. So feral cats has been probably, I've done more feral cat cartoons than anything other than Donald Trump, and maybe zoning. But and zoning in Palm Beach is always an issue, and parking is always an issue, and that sort of thing. Actually, there's been big changes in the art during the time that I was doing it, because when I originally started, the newspaper was in black and white. So I would sit down and do a little black and white watercolor painting every week. With brush and so forth. But then eventually, in the latter part of 2001, the editorial page went to color on press. And I had already been doing some digital illustration, and I realized that trying to do a full-color watercolor cartoon was going to take me hours, to really do it well. So I decided to go digital. And so from that point on, there are no originals. They're all digital files. And I tried to maintain the look as much as possible, and I was able to do that with software. But the transition happened there, and the similarities, I'll tell you this, it was extremely difficult to call down 128 cartoons out of over 1,000. And I could probably do two or three more books and if I thought I could sell them. And still, you know, not get into cartoons that I don't think are good enough to publish.
You you mentioned that there are a lot of Donald Trump cartoons in the book, and I'm sure there are many more that you've done over the years. What is it about Trump that makes him so appealing as a character in cartoons?
I mean, everything he does is larger than life, and he likes to be outrageous, but I think he also has his own opinions and his own set of ethics and his his own way of looking at the world. And so he stands so much in contrast to the general garden variety view of, you know, how things are done. He's also had a very difficult relationship with the town. Mm-hmm. That came out of when he first came up with the idea of turning his estate Mar-a-Lago into a private club as well as his own residence. I think it was a great idea, actually, and it's been a wonderful asset to the town. But he ran into an awful lot of opposition, and from his neighbors, from certain town politicians, and so forth. And he just he wasn't the guy to sit back and take that lightly. He's got a phalanx of attorneys, and he filed some $75 and $100 million lawsuits, and you know, basically ended up getting everything pretty much his own way. And but when you look at the record and you look at it's actually the same 20 year period that I've been doing cartoons that his long running controversy with the town has gone on. He's managed to accomplish a lot here and really added a lot of assets to the community. Of course, you know, I meet people at every one of my events that say, "Oh, I hate that Donald Trump guy. He's such a, he's such a despicable character," and all that stuff. I don't feel that way. You know, obviously I see him as being different, but I don't see him as being despicable. Hmm. And there's kind of a weird anti-development feeling in Palm Beach right now. And of course, he is a developer.
Have you had any direct contact with him over these 20 years?
Yeah, every now and then he'll like if he doesn't like something I did, he'll like do a Xerox copy of it, circle it, write a terse note, and have it emailed to me. And he did call me one time though when he did like something that I did. I wrote a column basically saying that the town should thank him for saving Mar-a-Lago. It was actually going to be torn down when he bought it. Mar-a-Lago is one of the most, in fact, there was a recent poll that was done by the American Institute of Architects in Florida, and they listed it as one of Florida's 10 most iconic buildings. And actually, it was one of two in Palm Beach. The other one was the Breakers. So Palm Beach would have been a lot poorer from the standpoint of its image and everything else if Mar-a-Lago had been torn down. Donald Trump saved it. And not only did he save it, but he's restored it now to the point to where it's probably in better condition than when Marjorie Merriweather Post owned it and E.F. Hutton.
Political cartoonists are having a hard time these days. I mean, everyone in the newspaper business is feeling somewhat endangered and not knowing from day to day if they're going to have a job and a lot of cutbacks and things. Is your position in Palm Beach any better than maybe if you were, you know, doing this in another city?
Well, I mean, Palm Beach Daily News is owned by a media company, just like most newspapers today. So there's always that potential for the axe to fall. I don't really see that happening necessarily unless it's over the editor's dead body. I mean, they like me. And I also think, that in general, the readers of the paper like having the cartoon on the page. So I think I'm fairly secure, but it's mainly because the Palm Beach Daily News is such a different kind of newspaper. I mean, it really almost reads like a magazine. There's so much lifestyle content and social news in it. Right from the very beginning, my cartoons were not the hard-edged political cartoons that you see in most newspapers. They're a little bit more of a combination of sort of New Yorker-ish gag cartoons about lifestyle and politics. I think I'm fairly secure, and I think it's because of the unique quality of the paper. It's a shame to see so many really good artists lose their jobs at metropolitan newspapers because it's a budget-cutting item, and they can, you know, get syndicated cartoons from the top 12 syndicated cartoonists in the nation or so, and do just fine on their editorial page. The only thing I can say to that is that things that, you know, the internet, I think, is the perfect vehicle for cartooning. I mean, you know, the cartoon shows up beautifully on this, you know, the iPhone. It shows up on the iPad even better. And in fact, just a simple gag panel cartoon or a simple cartoon strip or even a graphic novel really in many ways translates better on one of these devices than they do on paper. So I fully expect someday that cartooning is going to come to its own on electronic media. It's just that the industry really hasn't grasped how to fully distribute it yet. And I think that's going to be coming. And if it doesn't come through from larger publishers, it's going to come from small operations, like what I'm trying to start now with my website.
Well, good time for you to have mentioned that, because I want to let people know how they can get your book. And folks, you can find Billionaires and Butterfly Ballots, a 20-year Palm Beach cartoon spective, in great stores, pretty much in Palm Beach County. But otherwise, if you're outside of the area, you can go to David Wilson's website, which is palmbeachcartoons.com. Very easy to remember, palmbeachcartoons.com. David, are you on Twitter or Facebook as well? Anywhere else we can find you?
I have a Palm Beach Daily News Facebook page for my editorial cartoons. I also have one for the book called Billionaires and Butterfly Ballots. I haven't opened a Twitter account yet for the book, but I will. And I'm also on Twitter as David Wilson. All one word, of course.
All right. And it's two L's.
Two L's.
Two L's.
That's right.
Wilson. All right. Well, David, I really enjoyed the book. I really encourage people to check it out. You don't have to necessarily know anything about Palm Beach, because a lot of what's in there has a much broader level of interest, from Trump and the Pulitzers to just some of the local political issues that we've all read about over the years in other media. David's style is very cool. I'm sorry?
Don't forget cats.
Oh, yeah, the feral cats. You got to read about the feral cats.
And pets environmentally unsensitive animals like pythons. And
very good. Well, David Wilson, thank you so much for joining us today on Mr. Media, and good luck with your new book.
Thank you.
You can see and hear almost 1,000 Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest 2-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Mark Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, The BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, The TechCrunch Headlines, and The Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at stitcher.com/Mr. Media. That's stitcher.com/MR Media. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJS, the party authority for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJS or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJS.com, and tell them Mr. Media sent you. And thanks for listening.